Welcome to Tiger Bites, the Tiger Tactics podcast, where we ask 10 questions of leading attorneys in the United States about what drives their firm forward. Today, your host is Jay Ruane.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tiger Tactics author Jay Ruane. Today on the show, we have attorney Pat Cooney from West Hartford, Connecticut, who practices in Bristol, Connecticut. Hi, Pat.
Jay, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. So, Pat, tell me a little bit about your practice.
Yeah, I'm in a small general practice firm. We've been in business here continuously since 1907. There's five of us. As a firm of general practice, we do pretty much anything a small business or individual would need. I myself am a former public defender and have spent the vast majority of my career doing criminal defense, DUI defense. And in the last handful of years, I've started to add quite a bit more PI work, personal injury plaintiffs work, to my practice.
Okay, fantastic. So let's jump right into it. For me, at least, the most important chapter in the book, Tiger Tactics, is the vision chapter. You're now about 20 years into your career. What is your vision for your career going forward, and how does that fit into your life vision?
Well, you know, it's a tough question, Jay. As you know, we're sort of in the middle of our careers here. We've got good book of business. We've got responsibilities here. We've got family responsibilities. So you always got your eye on what's next and how you're going to bring in new business. I think that my firm and the practice, particularly here in Connecticut, is in a transition where there's we have some partners here that are in their 60s, and I have another partner here who's in their 40s, like I am. Which I think reflects a lot of what we see in Connecticut as a whole, where some of the attorneys are going to be starting to look towards what's next for them. And the rest of us are going to be figuring out how to fill those gaps and bring in some younger associates to help us continue with what we've been doing here for a number of years. So I think that's my firm is, I think, going to be riding that same wave that the rest of the state's going to be riding as partners start to look at what their next chapter is. And we start to backfill, bring in some associates to kind of help in that transition. My guess is that means for me in the next 5 years, certainly 10 years, taking on a little more of a supervisory role and, you know, maybe a little less running around courthouse to courthouse, but we'll see how that plays out. So I think that's what comes next for us here.
So you raise an interesting point that I want to get a little deeper with you about. You talk about having some older partners and then some partners who are in their 40s. Have you found there's a conflict or a rub between competing visions for the lawyers who are older, more established, although with 20 years, Pat, you're certainly established, although they may look at you as one of the young guys. But is there a rub or a conflict within a firm when you have partners of different ages? And how do you deal with that?
Well, you know, there is a rub, and it's an inherent rub. It's not a true problematic rub because, you know, the good thing is I like the guys I practice with. I always have. I've been here for, I think, 17 years or so. I wouldn't have hung around, nor would they have kept me around if we didn't appreciate each other as people and as lawyers as well. So I think it's a matter of communication, but there are times when, you know, there are discussions about, hey, you know, what are we going to do about long-term disability? Well, there's a couple guys here where that matters. There's a couple guys here where that doesn't matter. So, you know, we have an open line of communication about those things, and we kind of have to, you know, meet in the middle and figure out ways that can kind of keep everybody happy. I think it's a little bit responsibility of the guys that have been here for a while to remember when they were at our place in our careers. I think it's also a bit of a responsibility for the younger guys here to have an appreciation that that the older guys have deserved their position in the firm, and that we would like that position when, you know, you fast forward 20, 25 years. And it's a communication thing. And it's a process.
Now, is that something that you guys do formally and have, you know, weekly or monthly or quarterly meetings, or is it something that's more done informally when you're sort of sitting around the table having some lunch together?
We're an informal get-together group. we've talked for years and years about whether we should have more formalized meetings. Because we are a general practice firm, it means that different people are very busy at very different times of the day. And it makes for, you know, what's the right time to get together, a difficult process all by itself. You know, as you know, you're a GA criminal court guy like I am, and you know that the mornings are a time that we're running all over the place. That's not always the case for the guys who do land use work. So we're an informal group. There's only five of us. So it's not that difficult to grab somebody when you're having lunch with them, talk over an idea. They grab somebody when they're having coffee in the morning, and it's sort of a, not quite game of telephone tag, but you sort of do it piecemeal. At least that's how we have done it in the past.
Gotcha. Now, you indicated earlier that you left a secure job as a public defender to make that leap to go into private practice. Yeah. Why did you make the jump? And in retrospect, would you have done it earlier, later, or did you do it at the right time?
You know, I'm going to start on the back end of that first. I think I did it at the right time. The guys that I'm working with now, they actually offered me this spot probably about 9 months before I took it. And I said no at the time. They then came back to, luckily for me, they came back to me, you know, like I said, 8-9 months later. And at that point, I had thought some more about it, and I had done a little more homework, and I was ready to go. And I think it was the right time for me. I was in a smaller of our geographical area courts here in Connecticut. And, you know, you kind of see a lot of the same stuff. I mean, every case is a little different, but you sort of you start to see a lot of the same patterns. Going to a firm that did the kind of work that I was doing, criminal defense, DUI defense, along with a number of other practice areas, made a lot of sense. I could grow in different areas. I could sort of help my friends and family members in different ways. People who needed real estate work, wills, things like that, they could come into my firm as well. And for me, economically, it was the right time. The state was paying reasonably well. You wait around a little too long, you might price yourself out of a new job where you have to know things besides criminal defense. So in a lot of ways, it was the right time for me to go. And I think that the reason I went was tied into some of that too, ready to learn some new practice areas, learn how to bring in business, learn how to service different clients, learn how to help friends and family in a way that I couldn't purely as a public defender. I think at some point, those of us who do criminal defense work, we may not be institutional folks. And while I really like the public defender's office, I think highly of them as an institution now, I value my independence a little bit too.
Sure. Okay, so you talked a little bit about how you're out and about in courts every day. If you're sitting next to a young lawyer or even an older lawyer in a courthouse, and they're telling you that, you know, this coming Monday, they're going to launch and go out on their own, what is the best piece of advice that you could give them today on, you know, if they're starting, you know, 5, 6, 7 days from now in their own practice?
That's a good question. I think I give them a couple of pieces of advice. One, talk to everybody and anybody that you know. People that know you, they know you well, they know you're a lawyer. They may not know that you're the type of lawyer they need. And today, people don't necessarily think, well, geez, Pat Cooney or Jay Ruane is my family lawyer. You know, we go to them every time we need any kind of law work. That's what people thought about probably in our parents' generation, the generation before that, certainly. But today, that's not necessarily how people think of it. So I think that you really need to kind of reach out to all the people you know, your friends, your family, your law school classmates, maybe your mentor, people that you used to work with, assuming you're leaving on a good footing with them, and let them know what you do. Because referral sources are, you know, a really good backbone of how you get clients in the door. They meet you that way. You make them happy. The person who sent them along wants to send you somebody new. It's a good way to start. The other part of my advice to someone starting out brand new on their own is keep your costs down. fight those costs at every step, because some of those things, once they creep, are very hard to get back under control.
Fantastic. So now a word from our sponsor. If your law firm feels out of control or you don't know how to achieve growth and predictability, you need to know about Modern Law Practice. Modern Law Practice is designed to optimize law firms with coaching and implementation of best practices of everything from technology to data to financial modeling, culture, management, and more. Don't wait for your firm to start bringing you peace and prosperity. Contact modernlawpractice.com today. Okay, so Pat, where do you think most lawyers fail at customer service, and how do you keep that from happening at your firm?
I think the number one fail, and it's an umbrella fail, but the number one fail is forgetting that you have a person on the other side of your desk or on the other side of your phone. We see all lawyers at a certain point in your career. You've seen, you know, I don't know how many DUI cases, Jay. I've seen, I don't know, I couldn't even count how many DUI cases I've seen. But that might be the person's first time walking in your door, sitting at a lawyer's desk ever, and they're petrified. You may have a pretty fair idea of how things are going to turn out. You have a pretty fair idea that they might, you know, where there's going to have some bumps in the road for them, where they might have some difficulties. They don't know any of that. So I think that right from the get-go, remembering that it's a person on the other side of the desk in any scenario, divorce, even a will, land use, real estate. When you recognize that it's a person, I think you treat the person differently. I think that their fears, their concerns, their questions, especially a client who comes in the end of the week, late appointment, they've got a notebook full of questions, you're fried, you just want to get out of there. When you remember, listen, this is a person, they've got personal issues, personal problems. That's why people come to lawyers. People don't come to lawyers very often when they're happy. They come to us because they want us to help them with a problem. It's what we got into this business for. When you see it as a person on the other side, you're going to be faster on your return phone calls or your emails. You're going to be more patient. You're going to explain more. They're going to get more value from their meeting with you, from their conversations with you. And I think it all just flows from that reminder. And I think it's a reminder we all need. I'm limping into a vacation this Friday afternoon myself. So every once in a while, it's nice for me to remember that that it's a person on the other end. And I think it changes the whole dynamic of that conversation and how you treat a person.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So two more questions to go. First, there have been tremendous changes in how people find lawyers and how people consume legal services in the time since you started practicing. What do you see coming in the next two decades? And how do you prepare for that?
You know, it's a tough question for me, Jay, because although, you know, you and I have been buddies for more than half our lives, we went to law school together, we're probably on the opposite end of the tech spectrum. I always think of you as my go-to guy for what's next in the tech world, where I'm a little more of a dinosaur. So the one thing that I think might be an interesting meld of how the world is moving and where it used to be, I very much like the synergy, the energy, the bouncing off ideas of having people in a centralized location. The world is moving into a decentralized office space, people working remotely. And I think it would be very interesting to see if tech finds a way to help us all bridge that, those two modes of work, where guys like me who like the energy, like the bounce off of other people, people around, I like the energy of a building that's full, melds better with people who are more comfortable outside outsourcing and doing things more remotely through tech. So I think that would be an interesting thing from the lawyer's perspective. I do think that for the client, from the consumer's perspective, more, better, faster, I think is the trend. And I have a hard time seeing that stop or slow down anytime soon.
Gotcha. Okay, last question. So final chapter in the book is the best advice I ever got. So I'm going to ask you that question. When it comes to practicing law, what is the best advice you ever got and who'd you get it from?
When I was a young public defender, I had a conversation in a late afternoon with a state's attorney who's long since retired. And it turned out it was a miscommunication. And at some point, there was a question raised as to my veracity, my integrity. And I was very upset about it. I remember talking to an older public defender, and their advice was, you can never let that slide. Your reputation, your integrity, that's all you've got. And you got to zealously protect that. And I went back that next morning and had a long closed door conversation with the state's attorney. And we figured out that it was a miscommunication, and my integrity was intact and my reputation remained intact as it should have. And I think that that's a very important piece of practicing law, particularly in a small state like Connecticut, where you're going to see the same people over again and over again. So that's the one, the primary piece, legal advice. The one other that I'll mention quickly here at the end is advice that I got from a lawyer who's, again, long since retired now, and that's to take care of yourself. This business is, it's an all-encompassing business at times. It will take all the free time you give it. So you really need to block out time for yourself, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's getting out and playing softball, whether it's spending time with your kids, gardening, whatever it is that lets you unwind, get your blood pressure down, and keeps you sane and healthy. It's something I think you have to struggle to find, and you have to protect the time to do that whenever you get the chance.
Great. Pat, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. It's really been enlightening having you answer some questions, and we're glad to have as part of a tribe.
Thanks, Jake. Thanks for having me, bud.
Thanks for listening to Tiger Bites, the Tiger Tactics podcast. If you have read Tiger Tactics and want to be a guest, please visit Amazon.com to leave a review, or go to tigertacticsbook.com to join our mailing list.